You're listening to the Ideas Energized podcast powered by LARTA Institute. LARTA is a Los Angeles-based nonprofit organization whose mission is to help entrepreneurs bring their early-stage innovations in agriculture, energy, science, and technology to global markets. Learn more at LARTA.org. That's LARTA.org. This episode is part of a special series that will preview the topics and people that will drive the important discussions at this year's Ag Innovation Showcase, which will be held virtually for the first time this August 27th and 28th. Our hosts for the special series are Michael Reed Dimock and Roger Wasson. Michael is the host of the podcast Flipping the Table, featuring honest conversations about food, farming, and the future. Roger is the host of Farm to Table Talk, which brings listeners ideas, insights, and journeys from farm to table. This series was made possible through the sponsorship of OCP North America, the U.S. subsidiary of the OCP Group, a global leader in plant nutrition and soil fertility solutions.
Welcome to Ideas Energized, powered by the LARTA Institute, a podcast featuring innovators who will share their latest initiatives at LARTA's upcoming Ag Innovation Showcase, live online August 27 and 28. I'm Michael Reed Dimock.
And I'm Roger Wasson, and we are your hosts for a series of conversations that will whet your appetite for much more from the people and enterprises on the cutting edge of agriculture.
And this is a conversation with Yassine Shirkawi, the Vice President of Strategy, Innovation, and Analytics at OCP North America. OCP North America is a recently created subsidiary of the OCP Group, a leading global plant and nutrition company headquartered in Morocco. The parent company, OCP Group, has been supplying plant nutrition products to North American farmers for many years, working from Morocco and with a web of partners in North America. It's interesting to note they are the largest phosphate company in the world. They are committed to facilitating the infusion of technology ideas and a changing agricultural sector that will benefit farmers and their support networks. For example, in a previous podcast, we spoke with Kaiyu Guan and his company, Aspiring Universe. And they were the winners of the recent OCP Innovation Challenge.
Well, I tell you, I'm really interested in our conversation with you today, Yassine. But I have to start with one, which is, what does OCP stand for? It's an acronym for something. Explain that.
Well, thanks for having me, Roger and Michael. OCP is actually the full name of the company, but it used to stand for Office Chérifien des Phosphates, which is the name of the company that was set up when the company was created a century ago.
So phosphates, Morocco just happens to be where most of it appears naturally in the whole world. So at some point in time, what, 100 years ago or something, that people discovered, that, or 150 or whatever, that this helped plants grow better. And they thought, oh my God, we got half this country, or we got this large quantity here in Morocco, what the yep. rest of the world depends on.
So it's a pure geological accident. Phosphate is what's left over from the bones of dinosaurs that died millions of years ago. And you have a very good basin of phosphate in Morocco, which is actually similar to the one that you have here in the US in Florida. It used to be the same deposit, if you want, historically. And by USGS account, probably two-thirds of those reserves are located in Morocco. And we do consider ourselves as a steward of a finite resource that we handle very carefully.
Is there any risk of running out?
Risk of running out, not anytime soon. Probably 600 or 700 years of reserves at the current rate. So we're fine on that end. We do, as an industry, take very seriously the importance of making the most of that resource. And so it's right use, the right type of product at the right space, the right time. It's something that we really believe in. And there's always more work that can be done in that space. But not anytime soon. So rest assured.
Good. Well, 700 years, we'll check back. We'll have
I was interested in some of the stuff I was reading about the North American division, which you are a part of. You have this real focus on sustainability and helping farmers to both use the resources and new technologies and other resources as efficiently as possible to to both improve the profits, but you call out this need to ensure that farming is sustainable, that we can continue to farm and not destroy the environment. So just talk about how that emerged for the company.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question, and thanks for asking it, Michael. I usually, when I tackle this topic, I give this statistic, which is very interesting. As a company, we've been undergoing a transformation for the past 15 years, where we are 20,000 employees, roughly, give or take. We have the average age of the company that went from 46 years old to 36 years old in a matter of 10 years. Wow. So it's a significantly younger population that is acutely aware, especially in a country like Morocco, which is impacted by climate change with higher desertification, et cetera, et cetera. You're more as an individual keenly aware of the importance of being looking at sustainability, both from an economic standpoint, but also from an environmental standpoint. And so this is part of the internal dynamic that internally you have that interest. How can we sustainably mine this abundant resource that we have in the country and make the most of it, both environmentally, but also economically and socially? So internally, that's what spurred our interest there. So we have a strong emphasis on circular economy in the mining process, in the chemical transformation process. We historically used to sell our product. It leaves our ports and goes to our clients. And theoretically, you know, the ownership of that product is no longer ours. But what has changed, and I find this quite interesting as a member of that company, is that we feel responsibility to some extent to ensure that that product, when it leaves our, it's no longer ours, and it leaves our ports and goes through the value chain to the farmer, it's used in the best potential possible way to avoid having it leached or misused or impacting the environment in a negative way. Even though there's little we can do once the product is applied by, you know, is in the supply chain, is applied by the grower, but we feel we have that need to provide guidance on what's the best way to use that product. And that has translated, if you want, in how we're looking at innovation in general, because the topic here is the Ag Innovation Showcase coming, right? And why we're interested in innovation. I'm not going to give you the long story, just a short one, but let's just say that in the world of plant nutrition, historically, you would design your product on your industrial facilities, you would put it through a supply chain. This is what farmers have access to, and this is what they apply. This has shifted over the past 20 years, where you start with the need of the soil, the need of the grower, the economic constraints and the agronomic constraints under which they grow their product. And then you walk back all the way up to the value chain to design the right product and service that meets the need of that grower, which is easy to say, very difficult to implement. It requires a company such as ours to think of itself in specific market as less of a B2B company and more of a business-to-business-to-consumer company. It requires learning much more about the end users of the product that we make, and also how positioning innovation to service the value proposition of those end users. So that's how it came. And let me pause here because we can go on about innovation.
Oh, I have follow-ups, but go ahead, Roger.
No, I tell you what, I think this is really, really interesting. And because one of the things I think of now is where I see technology is getting to the point of understanding what the soil needs down to a square inch. Or, you know, it's just like getting almost ridiculous of how how tight. So I look at a lot of the technology is being able to, again, look at the land, look at the plants, and rather than just get some sort of generic P&K mixture of fertilizer off the shelf and apply the same to everything, really, really making it fit and then applying it. If you have that information about what's needed, but then applying it through drip irrigation systems and other kind of application processes. So it seems to me that you really got technology all around you that probably requires that mindset you're describing to be flexible and adjust and give the recipes that are specifically needed, you know, that particular plant or space or part of a field.
Oh, you're right, Roger. I think that technology is shaping the farm in a different way. I mean, let me step back. Sometimes we have a tendency to talk about agriculture worldwide as if it's one practice, one way of doing things. Let's just say that our markets on the African continent are very different from what you have here in the US. But if there is one common denominator, is that whether you are in a very mature agricultural system, like here in North America, or a less developed economic system in agricultural system, like in several sub-Saharan countries, for instance, technology plays a key role in ensuring that soils keep producing sustainably producing food and healthy food, and also intensifying their capacity to produce food. You know the statistics better than anyone. We have to feed a growing world population. There's not that much arable land left. So whatever land we have has to be prepped in a way that can produce food sustainably, right? And so technology, I believe personally, and I'm taking off my hat as a member of OC, but also as an individual, I believe that technology is going to be playing a big role on a different role depending on the market, but a big role nonetheless. Whether it is to develop modeling capabilities that are predictive and prescriptive in nature, to tell the grower that does not have the time to absorb that huge quantity of data that his or her farm are generating, to give insights to the grower how better to farm, what are the alternatives that they have to consider, what are their choices, and even what are the economic arbitrage they have to make when they take their growing decisions. This is in a very mature system like here in the US. But if you take the African continent, for instance, where we do what you call large-scale soil mapping, we did it at the scale of the whole country of Ethiopia with the government and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We did it also bottom-up, where we have literally labs that are on wheels moving around meeting growers that give them soil samples, and they tell them this is what your soil needs, and you map the countries that way. You're talking about growers that are oftentimes barely above subsistence level, but they have cell phones. Because Africa has leapfrogged the technology, they've foregone, you know, land lines, and they went straight to cell phones. And that gives you a huge opportunity to communicate with these growers, things such as what's going to happen in the weather, weather-wise in the coming few days, or if there's a pest that is emerging in a specific area that is neighboring to yours and you have to be careful, or also advice on how to make the most out of your specific soil condition to grow more food and have a bit more savings that you generate at your farm level. So different issues that can be addressed by some IoT devices, some satellite data, and also a lot of modeling capabilities and analytics.
This is good. I because I took note in your opening comments about your focus on the social aspects. And one of the big issues that's discussed here in the United States around the explosion and adoption of technology in agriculture is that smaller and mid-sized growers have less access to that technology, and therefore it'll make it even harder for them to compete in a world with very large producers. So I'm very curious about, because the issue of soil degradation or the nutrient density problems that we're having in our food today, modern food, because of the overtapping of soils in the past, those issues are really important, and it would be vital for no matter your scale, no matter your income level, no matter where you are in the world, that you are trying to repair or maintain the soil. So what are your thoughts on that?
Good point. And it's one of our for the showcase coming, one of the keynotes that we are going to organize is a panel to discuss this connectivity between healthier soils and more nutrient-dense crops. The way I view it is that there are two key topics today that we have to absolutely push forward to reframe how the general public thinks about agriculture. Unfortunately, in the press over the past 30 years, agriculture has been often seen as something that needs to be repaired to better address some of its inefficiencies when it comes to ecological systems and whatnot. But if you think about nutrient density, and if you think about soil carbon sequestration, not only these are huge opportunities to help the world adapt and mitigate climate change, make communities less fragile from a nutrition perspective, but there are also a huge opportunity to generate income streams for growers, especially smallholder farmers that badly need additional incomes, especially in a low commodity cycles such as the one we are in now. So when I think about nutrient density, which is a topic that has less history and less work done than soil carbon sequestration, even though soil carbon sequestration is also short in history in my taste. When you think about nutrient density, we need to remind people that farmers and growers are the steward of their land, that they are very eager not only to produce on quantity but quality food, and the ag showcase is an opportunity to come together as an ecosystem, as a value chain, to think about if a grower is going to be investing more time and resources in changing their practices on farm, how can revenues follow? How can we make it sustainable economically for that grower to sustainably contribute to mitigating and adapting to climate change and providing nutritious food to the population? And so I have an example here. There's a startup called Continuum Ag that is looking into this right now, and it's very interesting to actually see the kind of issues that they're facing and how they're trying to address it. You see, there is a very systemic issue. Today, an off-taker of a product of a farm, you know, when they buy those products, if they know that the protein content of the soybean that are produced on the farm, they have a couple of farms. One has a higher protein content. Well, you know, they're interested in buying the soybean that has a higher protein content, but the dollar figure does not necessarily follow. And so this stems from the fact also that the end consumer, you, me, etc., we are very reluctant to pay an extra dollar when we go buy our product at Walmart, Whole Foods, or whatever, to actually account for that extra sustainability effort on the farm. But I do think that on the medium to long run, this has to change. It has to change from a supply chain perspective, meaning growers have to be rewarded for the additional effort and practices that they put in place for soil carbon sequestration as well as for nutrient density. It has to be a change in what consumers are happy to pay for, and it has to change from a technology perspective across the value chain to enable the grower to deliver on that value proposition. And this is, if I close the loop, where OCP is interested in, is that how can we bring forth innovation in the plant nutrition space that are plant nutrition solutions that are sustainable, affordable, competitive, to help growers deliver on this value proposition that is emerging. That's how we view it. And this holds true whether it's in North America or when you're talking about smallholder farmers on the African continent that are further fragilized by climate change.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's so interesting to me about what you're explaining here is that for once we're talking about technology and the application that to address these needs that is scalable downward. That you can usually we're thinking about these technologies for the last 20 years about something. Well, sure, if you've got, you know, 5,000 acres in the Central Valley of California, you can hook up to the satellite and you can do all these things. But when you start using the example of some of these smallholder farms in Africa and so forth that can basically be connected to lots and lots of information with a smartphone, you know, getting that technology down to where it's available to all sizes and shapes of farmers, isn't it pretty incredible of the impact you could have globally?
It's already happening. It's not something that is coming forward. Already on the ground, we realized as OCP Group that when you have to tackle the issues of agricultural system across the 7 ecological ecosystems that you have on the African continent, the 50 plus countries that you have on the continent, you need to have a country by country approach. So, and you need to partner with that local ecosystem to help farmer improve their productivity. So we've been talking with startups, we've been talking with retailer, with the last mile input delivery providers, with the off-takers of the product, to try jointly help the grower produce better and more and sustainably. The question that you have right now, and this is where me as OCP North America, I have some legitimacy in talking about that, is that you ask anyone around the world where technology lies, they think of Silicon Valley. That's all nice and well. A lot of the technology indeed comes from Silicon Valley. If you deep dive in the US, you see that the origin of the IP happens oftentimes in the Midwest. Then the entrepreneurs move to the coast to raise money. And the as they raise money, they think about use cases around which they develop their solutions. These use cases are influenced a lot by the environment in which they operate. By saying that, what I'm saying is that it's very difficult for me to envisage someone that is in California helping solve a business solution for Burkina Faso in West Africa, because you have to be locally there in order to find that solution, right? What you can do, though, and this is what OCP North America strives to, is to build bridges between these between an African innovation ecosystem, and I'm using a generic word here, but multiple ecosystems there, and the US, because there are things that are transferable. Let's take a company that is running analytics to do crop yield modeling, for instance. Some of those core capabilities that are developed here in the context of North American farming, you can take some of those aspects and with the right business model, deploy them to answer problem statements that are identified and developed by entrepreneurs and growers on the African continent, for instance. It's that bridge that we have to encourage, because frankly, it's not the technology that's really a problem. It's the business solution. It's the business model that is a solution, especially when you deal with the barely above subsistence level growers on the African continent. I don't know if it answers your question, Roger. Yeah.
Well, I'll just say that, you know, as you speak, it reminds me of the big change that IBM made. There was a time when IBM just made machines. You will remember that. And then they became more of a knowledge company where they started to work with businesses to solve problems. And so as I'm thinking about the evolution of OCP, what you talked about really was at one time you were basically mining phosphate and delivering it around the world. But now you're solving problems, which requires a different framework about problem solving. But it also must mean that you're hiring different kinds of people that you hired in the past. So could you talk a little bit about the types of people that your company searches out?
In North America, you're dealing with a very mature agricultural system that requires more insights into what drives sustainability practices, for instance, on farm. That requires taking that data that is generated on farm and turning it into insights that can help improve farming, right? So OCP North America, as it is structured, we have a commercial team, of course. We have what we call a corporate engagement team that focuses on participating to that discussion that is happening in the US around the future of agriculture, international institutions that pepper the East Coast and research center and whatnot. And then you have a business line that I'm leading, which focuses on innovation, analytics, and strategy. And in that team, what we focus on is having data scientists that are really cognizant of some of the issues that are happening on the value chain or on farm and translating that into problem statements that can be solved by big data and data mining, for instance. We're focusing on an innovation business development team that builds connection with the innovation ecosystems here. So our friends at LATA, we're doing great job with them. We've just run an innovation challenge with them, and it's exciting to work with them to engage more with the academic world, etc. here. So that's one example. But beyond that, we've just been a founding member of Plug and Play in Fargo, alongside CHS, a large cooperative, Microsoft, and Bremer Bank, which is a large ag bank here. And the idea is to have a brick and mortar place where you can engage with startups and develop use cases jointly to better serve the farmers here and the growers here in the US. So I need teams that know how to work in an environment where problem statements have to be, where you have to learn the tempo as you dance with a partner, for instance. So you have business developers at heart that are comfortable with blurred objectives and that can build as they go, as there is a discovery process with those startup partners. The last element, and I'm going to stop here, is research, fundamental research. So OCP has built a university which is poised to become a world-class university, especially in phosphorus research. And we're working a lot with academia here in the US so that we can push research in the right direction. When it comes to fundamental research around fertilizer, fertility solutions, services, etc. So the kind of partnership, we're looking for a team, or we've been building the team, that can interact equally comfortably with business-minded people, as well as people that focus on academia and fundamental research. We work with Tri-Society, for instance, where we try to, again, build a bridge between African plant nutrition issues and North American plant nutrition issues. We are sponsoring research with USDA through our field to market membership around, again, sustainability and the use of phosphorus on farm to avoid runoff, these sorts of things. So it's a mixed bag of people that can be standalone, building partnerships across the value chain here, on top of the usual key account manager, agronomist that you have to have when you're a plant nutrition company.
You know, Yashin, I'm just struck by the paradox here, because we're talking about a very old product. I mean, we won't have to go all the way back to the dinosaurs, but what has it been, maybe 150 or 200 years, that it's been more accepted that agriculture, that for one reason or another, the plants did better if there was adequate phosphates that were used in the mix? And in through all of this technology and all of these changes, there's still not a substitute, really, for the role phosphates playing, I assume, in the mix, is there? I mean, so you get the basic product is there. You're just adjusting and utilizing all this technology and the application of it, like you say, for sustainability around the world. And I just find that kind of intriguing. It's a very, very old product, but wrapped in the newest ideas and technologies and plans for efficiency and sustainability.
Yes. The way I would think about it is there is a huge margin of improvement in how the product is applied, is absorbed by the plant, and is recycled. That's really how you think about it, especially if in the context of a finite resource, you want to make sure that beyond the economic equation of the farmer, how much fertilizer do I need to buy, etc., it's more like if you put a plant nutrition on your farm, you want to make sure that as much of it as possible goes towards growing the right type of crop with the right level of nutrition, etc. And so this is where innovation takes place. And one element I can share with you is that the OCP Group is looking at launching soon a corporate venture capital fund that will be investing specifically in two fields at this stage. One of them is digital agronomy, because we need to be able to find ways to help farmers make better decisions and engage with them through digital agronomy. And the other one, which is really growing from our core business, which is plant and crop fertility. Typically, in this journey, there are things that we can do internally on our own resources, organic growth, our R&D effort. But we know that a lot of this innovation, when it comes to improving how phosphorus is uptaken by the plant, how it is applied, etc., is going to happen hand in hand in partnership with the broader innovation ecosystem. And that's where the venture capital fund is going to play a role, is help spur those partnerships. Things that we would be looking at are things that we are not necessarily, we have not developed internally. We're not in the microbial space, for instance. That's something that we're interested in biostimulants. How can we make our mineral fertilizer better absorbed by the plant by combining it with microbial colonies, right? Or can we find innovation that allows us to improve our current lineup of product, again, to ensure that when applied properly, it is better absorbed by the plant? So this is actually a strong emphasis and that we have now. And there is it's really blue ocean approach, because there's no clear leader in this space worldwide. It's really early stage from a business perspective. So we're all learning together how to bring to market these new technologies. And again, this is why the showcase is a good place to be.
Yeah, it's very encouraging to me to hear the kinds of research and the approach you're taking, because I was really struck by the fact that at the beginning you were talking about the fact that there's 600 to 700 years of phosphate left on the planet at the current rate of use. But actually, that's less than 10% of the amount of time that agriculture has existed. So it actually puts in perspective that this is a tremendous challenge, and that we must elongate the supply of phosphate as long as possible, because at currently there is no alternative. So that raises the question, if you're thinking very long term, are you as a company thinking very long term about what are the sources, or what is the replacement, or how are we going to deal with this phosphate challenge 700 years from now?
It's a good question, and probably I would frame it slightly differently if you don't mind, Michael. I would say that the past 100 years are really part, a short part of our history as a species, right? And we had to feed a rapidly growing population. So a lot of the emphasis is that how can we get agriculture to the level, especially industrial agriculture, that we can feed 1 billion people in India, 1 billion people in China, and soon 1 billion people on the African continent, right? So that was the first question. I think that now we're entering this stage where it's not about quantity of product, it's about how to ensure that food goes to the right place. And it's a good phase also to start thinking about, all right, in our agricultural system, how can we make more with less? We know that we still need to have input to grow product on farms in order to meet the growing population. How can we make the most out of it when we apply a product that is mined? And so I would say that our emphasis now as a company is really to say, the molecule of P2O5, we want it to have the more bangs for the bucks for the growers and for society in general. So what can we do with it so that growers can make the most out of it? That's how we've been looking at it right now. And this is where we are focusing our efforts. Not necessarily into alternatives, because we do believe in the rate of technological transformation, and we don't foresee that as an immediate issue, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you what, people are very interested in the fact that how our food is grown and whether it's sustainable, regenerative, and you know, somehow we got to figure out how we get this story reduced that it could fit on a label at some point in time, because there's so much information that people want to know and feel reassured that in agriculture across the world, they're taking steps like you're taking. And I really want to thank Yasheen for sharing with us today, and look forward to having you involved with the Ag Innovation Showcase. It's going to be online August 27th to 28th, and people can find more information on OCP North America on the web at ocpgroup.ma. We wanted to ask you all to join us again, find out more information about OCP, but also join us for our next episode in the Ideas Energize series.
And to learn more and to register for the Ag Innovation Showcase, you can visit the web at agshowcase.com. That's agshowcase.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.